I'm absolutely delighted to have with us Kevin Clear. And Kevin has four books on the Australian Book Lovers website. And I don't think we're talking about any particular book, but perhaps all of them. Hello, Kevin.
Hello, Veronica. Thanks for having me.
No worries. Now, Kevin, I love your website, which says a little fantasy, a little sci-fi, a little love. What a great combination of genres.
Yes, because I used to, my slogan used to be musings of an overthinker, because I used to try to get the blog part. But after I went to GenreCon in Brisbane, I realised that's not selling myself at all. That's not selling the books and getting the idea of what the books are about. So I totally changed the way my website was structured.
Okay, there you go. Now, what country are you writing on, Kevin?
Gadigal country.
Gadigal. All right. So you're up in New South Wales in Sydney. Fantastic.
Yep.
And I believe that you've done a little bit of work for Curie Radio up there.
Yeah. Me and my partner, who is Aboriginal descent, from Kamilaroi country.
He may well get you for that one, for hesitating.
Actually, you know, the funny thing is, what used to remind me, because dear old Google knows everything.
Of course.
On my old Samsung Galaxy phone, I didn't even have his name. Like, I had his, you know, the lovey-dovey name we call each other.
Yes, yeah.
And I had a pixelated photo of him for his contact, and straight away the, you know, Android matched him with Kamilaroi country, even though he's never written that anywhere or put it anywhere.
That's a little spooky.
And Google knew exactly, first off, that he was Aboriginal and this is his country because from where he was born. And that freaked me out. My new phone, which is also a Samsung, hasn't done that. But that did freak me out when it did that all that time ago. Yes, but we had a show called The Rhythm Divine for 11 years on Curie Radio. It started off on Saturday nights, and for the last 3 years, then it became on Friday night. So we could just finish work and go straight and do our show, and then our entire weekend was free. And it was all about just exploring music, different genres of music, and bringing different genres of music to our audience.
Fantastic. And speaking of audiences, tell me a little bit about your particular audience. You know, with sci-fi, fantasy, and romance, who do you write for?
I've learnt that most of my readers are older women or older gay men. But a good friend of mine who has done a bit of freelance work with an office that is full of millennials tells me they like my books as well. There's one particular one he introduced them to, and he found that they were repeating some of the comedy lines to each other. But he also told me that some of the millennials, they have no idea what they're reading because of short attention span. They just they just love the comedy lines in them. So I've learnt to focus on an older age bracket.
Right.
But my friend is saying, maybe not necessarily so. Yeah.
So is there hope for one of your books to be, you know, miniseries? Do we see it on Netflix anytime soon?
I would so love that. I would so love that. I'd love I'd love Drama Queens Would Love Scenes to be a series. But my friend who works with millennials, because he introduced them to Winter Masquerade, you know, I could see that as a movie, because it's only novella. It'd be so nice. I think we'd all love a deal with Netflix. Let's face it.
That's right.
Yeah.
Very good. And they are doing some great work, particularly in the sci-fi and fantasy area, which a lot of people are a bit sort of leery of, you know, given how much it took to do the Lord of the Rings trilogy. But anyway, we digress. So tell us a little bit about, or, you know, the best response you've had. You've said you've got millennials reading them, you've got older women reading, you've got gay men reading them. So what's the best response that you've ever seen?
The good thing is I've had a lot of good reviews for my work. The only work that I've had totally mixed reviews, as in there's no middle ground, it's either love and hate, is when I tried to write a romance. Nate and the New Yorker and Nate's Last Tango, when that came out, it divided audiences, because it's actually more a story about grief than it is about romance. So so some people adored it and what it was saying about someone grieving over a past relationship when they're thrown into a new one and they're not quite ready yet. Yet this guy is lovely and seems perfect, but but Nathan's not ready to commit. So of course, the true romance lovers totally slagged it off. There's a really, there's a wonderful review of someone who doesn't like the book at all, but she, but her review is filled with real wit. And I often share it with people. You know, she talks about, you know, not only is do we have to suspend our disbelief, you know, to a point where it's unbelievable. You know, but I can't even, I can't remember what she's wrote. I'd have to look it up quickly. But she's my favorite. She's my favorite bad review I ever got.
So, Kevin, what about some good reviews? Tell us about when you've had a good review of your work.
I've had some beautiful reviews generally for a lot of my work. But when Drama Queens with Love Scenes came out, my first book, because I've got seven out there at the moment, and there's an eighth one that's just been signed up.
Fantastic.
Everyone fell in love with a secondary character named Guy, who's the insecure angel in it. And this threw me because I was already writing the sequel to it and I didn't include him in the sequel.
Oh, no.
And all of a sudden, everyone's saying, like reviewers and readers are putting in, I've put my own request in for my own guardian angel and I want him to be Guy. and another person wrote, he's the emotional linchpin of the book. So everyone was talking about him. So I had to really rethink and rewrite the sequel to include him. You know, so he's definitely there in all three of the Actors and Angels series.
Beautiful. So tell me, as a writer then, are you a plotter or a pantser?
I started off plotting early on because the sequel to Drama Queens with Love Scenes is one called Drama Queens and Adult Themes, which is a bit of a play on Veronica, our age group, when you used to watch TV and they'd say, and this program includes adult themes. The title is lost to Americans. They don't quite understand why I called it that, but that's why. Yeah. That book, because not everyone knows the full story, because part of it's set in the afterlife, part of it is my characters from the first novel reincarnated and living in Sydney. So I had to write it from four different points of view. So I had to carefully plot in a way that each of the storytellers would continue the story. They wouldn't retell another part or... So that's when I became a plotter. When I wrote Social Media Central, because it was the first time I ever wrote dystopian, I kept second-guessing myself. And as I was writing it, I kept rewriting and moving away from my outline. And even there was a secondary character in it who decided she needed more of a starring role. So that helped panster it a bit because it meant that she became the girlfriend of one of my other characters. And so what I had planned for that other character being single went out the window. And now I kind of do half plot, half panster. For the sequel, which is still a work in progress, to Social Media Central, which is called Virtual Insanity, I have stuck to the outline, but there's another project I'm working on at the moment, which is a contemporary piece set in the rave party culture days of the 90s in Sydney, which I'm finding I'm panstering a little bit because I think, Veronica, we all know that once we've got a few books under our belt, we kind of know what our readers expect. And sometimes, even though in the outline you've written that you're going to move to this other character in the secondary storyline, instinctively you know, no, if I leave this main storyline at the moment and move to another character, the reader won't like it. They'll get frustrated. And you kind of know that. So this is why I've become partly... I do definitely outline. Sometimes I'll outline a second draft before I go back to the book. And even with one of my works in progress at the moment, the one is set in the 90s, I'm already writing notes for the second draft. You know, what I need to expand on, what, you know, even before I've even read it and see if it's any good. So, yeah, I'm a hybrid, but I've learnt to be a hybrid just through, you know, author instinct.
Sounds good. And I love the name of that sequel. Very nice. So tell me, are there any secrets hidden in your writing? You sound like the characters are telling you what to do and they're coming, you know, merging from one book to the other. So what secrets have you got in your writing?
Except for Social Media Central, which is totally in a different, you know, it's set in 2064, it's in a different place, different time. There are crossroads with my other books. The Actors and Angels series, because like Drama Queens with Love Scenes is set in the theatre district of the afterlife, and the two main characters in the first chapter, they're dead, but they don't remember how they died. And the second book, like I said, takes place both on Earth and in the afterlife. And the third book, Drama Queens and Devilish Schemes, takes place in the afterlife. With Nate and the New Yorker, I'm giving a spoiler away, but the reason Nate is
if anybody
grieving,
doesn't want to hear this, please just turn it off and fast forward for a couple of minutes. Go
ahead. Actually, the reviewer who was witty and hated it gave the spoiler away, and I was so annoyed that she did that. It's like, I'll tell you what she said. She said, "And there's a ghost in this story? I didn't expect a ghost." So basically, Nate is grieving because his soulmate actually died early, and this is why he's not ready for the perfect relationship. But I've been able to tie in different scenes from different point of views. For example, in it's definitely in Drama Queens and Devilish Schemes, I think, or maybe in Drama Queens and adult themes. You can tell I don't reread my own books. There's a fantasy scene where Guy the Angel and the main character Adam are suddenly in Buenos Aires, in this mystical version of Buenos Aires. The pink palace is there, and there's all these tango dancers. In the last scene of Nate's last tango, where Nate is in Buenos Aires, he does see a fantasy version of his former lover dancing, and his former dead lover has this blonde curl over his forehead, and that's referenced in the fantasy scene in that Actors and Angels scene where they're suddenly in Buenos Aires. So I do have little, like, I don't know, hidden Easter eggs or whatever you call them, where they do, and the one that's been signed, that's called The Midnight Man, actually has the characters from Nate and the New Yorker, but not with his New Yorker boyfriend, Cameron, actually with his actual boyfriend, with his soulmate back in those days. I do...
Sounds like a whole family tree. And how do you keep track of them?
It's hard because, like I said, I never reread my own books. I find it hard to do because whatever I've dealt with in life writing that book, it's gone. I don't need to revisit it. For example, in Drama Queens with Love Scenes, there's aspects of a time when I was bullied at work in there, but it's done in a different setting, obviously not in a work setting. So now that I've written it, I don't need to revisit it. In Winter Masquerade, that's actually about a time in my life when I was in an abusive relationship. And the main character is in denial that he's in an abusive relationship, and he suddenly finds himself in this fantasy Alice in Wonderland through the looking glass type of world, escaping for a while and slowly coming to terms with it. Again, that's something I don't need to reread. I've put it out there in a book. I don't need to, you know, rediscover it.
Yeah, and look, writing is therapy. What a brilliant thing. Now, you've just mentioned a contract. So are your books self-published, traditionally published? Tell us where you're at with that.
I'm with a small publisher called Nine Star Press. It's actually the third publisher I've been with, because the first publisher had this habit of not doing their royalties.
And all of us learnt,
we slowly learnt that if we started complaining about it, they'd drop our contract. The second publisher I was with, Wild City Press, went under. But fortunately, the editor I worked with at Wild City Press brought me over to Nine Star Press. So when they folded, I could re-release my books on Nine Star Press and continue. So there are small LGBTQIA plus publisher in the US. They were trying to do more literary stuff to begin with, but then the market, you know, they kept asking more for fantasy and science fiction, which is fine. But they still are trying to put the contemporary stuff out there because they do want to get those awards and that recognition. So I have that beautiful luxury of being assigned a cover designer, a cover artist, you know, being given an editor. And I've got, now got an editor who's in London, so my books are starting to come out in the type of English spelling that we like to use. Because dear old Jason, my American editor, I had to then, after I finished the book, I'd do another copy and paste, change it to American spelling, let it do a spell check, change everything for him. So a lot of my books are in American spelling, but I can now do them in Australian spelling. And yeah, of course, I've got the luxury of then copy editing and line editing.
Fantastic. You know. So important in putting a good product out.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah.
So let's go back to before the writing, and you've said, you know, you're a little bit of a pantser and plotter somewhere in between there. So tell me about research in your writing.
The only one I'm really researching, I've had to research, is the book I'm writing at the moment set back in the 90s. Now, the thing is, I wanted to write this book because my partner and I, or my now husband, Warren, we've been together for 30 years. So we started out as, you know, late 20-somethings and 30-somethings in the 90s, doing all those dance parties and Mardi Gras and sleaze and rap parties and all the other one, toy box and all that, that were around back in the 90s. You know, so that was our courting days, basically, you know, dancing the night away. And I wanted to do a one set in the 90s, but also because the 90s, you know, before 9/11, it was the last time that the world seemed to make sense. And, you know, we all could find a job that paid well, enough for us to do brunch on Sundays or Saturdays, call our friends, do picnics, actually not have mobile phones with us, organize our whole social engagements by the landline at home and the answering and the answering machine, coming home and getting an invitation on the answering machine, calling back and confirming if you're confirming on their answering machine. You know, and that life that we all had that was social, and which I want to celebrate that, and especially celebrating it with friends that are often going out because they could afford to go out, and still find the time to buy, you know, get into a mortgage in Sydney and have a life. Because the one thing that I'm finding with, say, my Gen Y gay friends, well, there is no social life out there. They're picking up on apps, and that's a completely different, like, there's no friendships forming, there's no, and I feel like that generation have missed out. So back to research. The State Library in New South Wales put aside for me all the microfilm of all the 90s edition of Sydney Star Observer, a gay publication. I was still going in Sydney, but it, you know, used to come out every fortnight. We'd look through the social pages. We'd see all the obituaries because of AIDS. But it really helped me bring back that era. You know, suddenly I was looking at the early 90s editions and going, oh, there was a lot of gay bashings off Oxford Street. And I forgot about that. And the Guardian Angel movement that used to come with the berets, and you used to have the whistles. It'd be got, men and women with whistles. Mm-hmm. So if there was a bashing going, they'd whistle so you could, there'd be safety in numbers. Mm-hmm. Down to like the mid-90s where the culture was really going, the Doc Martens, the waistcoat over a T-shirt and the big belt buckle and the ripped jeans, you know, that's something you'd rip yourself.
Yes.
You know, the pine furniture that we all stained because brown was the new black. You know, I want to relive as, and telling jokes. People don't tell jokes anymore.
Mm.
And I had to try to remember all these jokes to weave into the book so that we'd get a sense of more social life.
Yeah.
And more people, you know, you met on the street, faces you'd know that you never knew the names of, but they were there at the midnight shift and at DCM and at all the dance parties.
Yeah.
So it was great having this research and also seeing gay culture move into a place where these gay publications were being read by more people. So they were doing reviews on all the mainstream theatre and art and movies and television, not just in the early 90s on any bit of gay culture that existed somewhere on television or whatever, or a storyline on GP or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's really helped me relive and remember things that I forgot. And one of the most, I'll just end with this little bit.
Mm-hmm.
One of the most interesting things I read in one of the 1990 editions was that the Young Liberals had their meeting in Adelaide, and they were going to take to the Liberal Party how the age of consent for gay people should be the same all over Australia. It should be 16. And reading that, it was still illegal in Tasmania, decriminalised in, I think it was Western Australia, I could be wrong, still 21 in Queensland, or maybe in Queensland it was decriminalised. I can't remember, but remembering that it was still, you know, illegal and decriminalised, and the age was 21 here and 18 there, and this was the Young Liberals saying this. You know, like the Young Liberals today aren't that breed, you know?
Interesting.
Yeah.
Oh, fantastic. Okay. Embedding is so important. You know, I think as a child of the 60s, there's so much that we have forgotten. Even just you mentioning those bits and pieces, I think, yes. Landlines, etc. Kevin, you are also a great supporter of the writing community on Twitter. And yourself and Rebecca Langham are responsible for OzWrites. So tell us a little bit about what happens with OzWrites, which is a hashtag OzWrites on Twitter.
Yes, Rebecca Langham started it a while back. And it was a time, she's with the same American publisher as me. And both of us, our social media was so caught up with Americans and such that we weren't acting locally. And the real thing, unless you find your tribe locally, it's almost impossible when you live in a totally different time zone to reach out to an American audience, a European audience, a UK audience.
Yeah.
So she was smart enough to get us to create OzWrites on Twitter to help us connect with Australians. When COVID hit, because she's a school teacher, she was suddenly creating Zoom classes and didn't have time for OzWrites. So I took over. I said, do you want me to create one of the prompts for a month? And basically what OzWrites is, once a month, you get a whole month of prompts every second day, and they can be everything from, you know, are you a plotter or a panster? Tell us about your latest whip. Or show us a picture of your favorite room, or tell us about your favorite old toy. So I took it over 1 month because I knew she didn't have time to do it. And since then, we both share the load back and forth, creating the prompts. I do the extra thing of publishing the prompts on the day they're meant to come out, mainly because I don't want all the prompts to be my pinned tweet. Because I do book trailers with actual actors, so I need my I need my pinned tweet to be that, the latest book trailer, you know, with an actor telling you about his character.
Yes.
So there's different prompts. So come along and look for hashtag AUSWRITES and come and join the fun with Ozrites.
Fantastic. And I am there too. And I think it's such a great mix of nostalgia and story writing and lots of Aussie icons that are discussed. And as you say, some personal stuff to get to know the Ozrites community a little more. So it's great.
And out of it has, the Australian Book Lovers website has come out of it. Nothing to do with Rebecca or I.
No, but it was such an inspiration. That's it. It was like, okay, this is where the writers are. Where are the books?
Yes.
And it was so hard to find. But so we thought, you know what? Let's do it.
And doing this podcast as well. Yeah, good on you guys.
Yeah, so what from one little seed, which is fantastic. So, yes, we are definitely appreciative of Rebecca's idea.
Yeah.
So where else can people find you online?
I'm very active on Twitter. I also have an Instagram account because work I freelance for that I used to work at all day once upon a time.
Yep.
I was surrounded by millennials and Gen Y, so they got me onto Instagram.
Right.
And, of course, Facebook. But as a lot of us authors know, even having a dedicated page on Facebook doesn't reach people the way it used to in years past. So I just have I keep my Facebook author page open, which is not under my own name, which is under the original name of Drama Queens with Love Scenes.
Mm-hmm.
But I keep it open because people still find it and start following, even though I know it doesn't reach people.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But I'm most active on Twitter, and I do play with my audiences differently across the three platforms because I know they're three different audiences. Mm-hmm. But also I have a newsletter. Sign up for the newsletter. I always start my newsletter telling you what's going on in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And then, going on and talking about other things. And one thing that's going on in my life at the moment, a few of us from my queer publishing, Nine Star Press,
mm-hmm.
are putting together a virtual online queer book conference. For most of us in Australia, it'll happen on May the 9th.
Mm-hmm.
It's a one-day thing, but for people in different time zones, it's mostly May 8. It'll start at like some ungodly hour on May 9 for us. but we're trying to get some Australian queer writers on board.
Fantastic.
To be part of the time zone that suits me and Gillian in New Zealand.
Yep.
Who are part of this group. So
excellent.
So keep an eye out for Icarus, Icarus. Book conference that'll be heading off in May.
Fantastic. All right. Unfortunately, that's all we've got time for today. So thank you to everybody for listening to Australian Book Lovers. And in particular, we hope you enjoyed hearing a little bit more about Kevin Clear and his fantastic works of science fiction, fantasy, romance, and many other things in the writing community that he does.